The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 303 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me again this week, the Godfather, Bill Lack. How are you today, Bill?
When's the Red Leg Nation Christmas party?
Bill, I'm sorry.
I didn't get my invitation.
We all had a vote. And after the way you embarrassed everyone that one year, you're not invited anymore.
Well, you shouldn't have had Brandon Phillips at the party.
I agree. It was my fault. But, that being said.
Next time I'm bringing Bill Plummer with me. That's all I'm telling you.
Okay. If you're going to bring Bill Plummer, actually, we'll put you back on the invitation list.
All right, there we go.
BP's no longer. He's persona non grata, too. So,
you and him aren't friends anymore.
That's right. No, we're not on speaking terms since he sent me some nasty messages on the Twitter site. So we're going to talk about the Cincinnati Reds now. It's been an eventful week for the Reds, but it's a new year, and we're going to have some special all-decade talk as well here later in the podcast. But do have some big news that we need to discuss, and that's the Reds signed a free agent today. And of course, this week, right-handed reliever Tyler Thornburg was signed to a minor league contract with an invitation to spring training. So exciting news for the Reds, right?
Yeah, I sent in for my World Series tickets today.
Yeah, Tyler Thornburg, 31-year-old pitcher. Happy to have Tyler Thornburg, minor league invite to spring training. Whatever, I don't have any problem with any of those, but obviously the big deal that was consummated this week was the Reds signing Shogo Akiyama, Japanese outfielder, to a deal for 3 years and somewhere north of $15 million, what the reports say. Some conflicts, but it has been reported and has been confirmed, and Shogo Akiyama still has to have a physical and everything, but he's going to be a Cincinnati Red. Now, there are some other rumors, things going around that may put the Akiyama signing in more focus for us, but overall, we've talked about Akiyama on the podcast before. Overall, I think I'm pretty happy with this signing. You have any initial thoughts on the new signing?
Well, this is kind of like a Christmas present to me. I don't know, I just know what I've read about him. I've never seen him play like most of us. But as you and Jason were talking about last week, I'll take a guy that gets on base at the rate he does. I mean, I'm really excited about this signing. Now, maybe once we get to see him up close and personal, we won't be as excited as we are now, but right now, I think this is a really good move. Again, it gives him so much more versatility in the outfield.
Yeah, he can play anywhere in the outfield. He's been a center fielder, and all the reports are that he's not quite likely to stick in center field full-time, although he could still play there some. But it does give him so much flexibility in getting on base. Since 2015 season began, Akiyama has hit .321 with a .399 on-base percentage and almost a .500 slugging percentage as well in Japan. Now, again, that's Japan, and that's, not exactly Major League Baseball competition, but it's close. And so, he's a guy that you can expect, I would think, to contribute almost immediately to the Reds in some capacity. So I'm incredibly excited about it. And I'm not only excited because the Reds made another free agent signing, but also because for at least the next 3 years, I get to say Shogo Akiyama. I love it.
Is that going to be your new punch word?
Maybe.
Shogo, go, go.
Shogo, go, go.
What do you think? Heeman 1 and Winker and 2 against right-handed pitching?
Man, that sounds good, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah,
it really does.
Sounds like some base runners to me.
It does. Frankly, you got Senzel in there somewhere that gets on base a lot, depending on what happens the next little bit. So I could not be more excited about a guy like this. The Reds have not yet acquired that big stud that we were hoping for, and that may still come by trade. They weren't able to get any. You know, like Moustakas is a good player. I like Mike Moustakas, but Akiyama is not really one that moves the needle a ton. But he is a serious upgrade in talent, and this is a another piece to a winning team, and clearly a piece to a bigger puzzle, because when it happened, I said, this can't be the last move. I mean, there's got to be something else going on, right? Because it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Where's he going to play, first of all? Do the Reds think he can play center field? If so, well, what's the deal with Senzel? Do they think he can play right field full-time? I don't know. My first thought was, boy, I like the idea, and I think I said this with Jason, I really like the idea of Akiyama and Kino platooning in right and Winker and Irvin in left, and then you start looking like a decent outfield. The news came out earlier today that the Reds are one of three teams that are still hot and heavy trying to sign free agent Marcell Ozuna, who we've talked about many times here. Now, Bill, I'll let you take the first crack at this, but that leaves a lot of outfielders. If the Reds were to sign Ozuna, and I'm not against that either. I think Ozuna has his good qualities, but that you'd have, here's your outfielders: Nick Senzel, Jesse Winker, Aristides Aquino, Philip Irvin, Marcell Ozuna. Not counting guys like Josh Van Meter and Travis Jankowski, who they got earlier this year.
Schebler.
Scott Schebler. I mean, Mark Payton, the Rule 5 guy. So, but even just the guys that we expected to be around, Senzel, Winker, Aquino, Irvin, Shogo, and Ozuna. That's six names for three spots. How does all this play out?
Well, I think what you're alluding to is there has to be something else in play here. I want to agree with Doug Gray, and I think he said this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. I would have rather had Corey Dickerson than Ozuna or Castellanos. I like Corey Dickerson. But, ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all be happy at Christmas. Ozuna, he'll make them a better, like you said, he'll make them a better team. But they're going to be so overpacked with outfielders at this point that you have to believe something else is going on. Whether it's a trade with Cleveland, whether it's a three, you've heard rumors of three team deals, blah, blah, blah. I like the Seager kid in L.A. too. He would be a hell of an upgrade for us too if we ended up with him. That'd be a hell of a consolation prize.
Yeah, I think the one thing that starts to look, maybe I'm just overanalyzing, I don't know, but it starts to look an awful lot to me like the Reds are seriously shopping Nick Senzel in one of these big trade packages, perhaps for Francisco Lindor, I don't know. But that would make sense because you've got two guys in Akiyama and Ozuna who could perhaps share some center field. Both have played center field. You've got a bunch of guys that you could mix and match. Like someone in our Slack channel, Red Leg Nation Radio Slack channel, that you can get access to if you join us at patreon.com/redlegradio. But somebody said a super platoon in the outfield of a bunch of different guys. And, I'm not sure. The only ways that signing Ozuna and Akiyama make sense to me are, there are only two ways to me. Number one, at least one or more of these outfielders is gone in a trade. And they're pretty confident that's going to happen. Number two, Nick Senzel moves to shortstop. Now, I don't see that happening. And so the only other option to me would have to be, cause I don't know how you go. Maybe you do, you ride with Senzel, Winker, Akiyama, and Ozuna as your four primary outfielders. I don't know. That's a pretty good outfield.
It's a real good outfield. I'm looking at Ozuna here, and last time he played much center, any sizable time in center field was in 16. But as I think you guys have talked about in the past, they were playing Winker in center field last year. So, their decision on who to play in center field, the bar isn't real high.
Right, and with all the shifting and everything these days, I still don't know. You for years kind of used to try to get me to pump the brakes on defensive metrics and believe in him. And that's been one thing that we've constantly talked about. And I've always been a little bit more of a believer in him. And I'm coming over to your side of the fence on that. I believe less and less in defensive metrics. And I just don't know. The Reds have so many proprietary things that we don't have access to. They may truly believe that that you can make do with what you would think is a worse defensive lineup just because of shifting and things like that. So
yeah, positioning and
yeah. So I don't know, you know, I guess I'm talking myself out of saying there has to be a trade, but that seems the most likely scenario is that the Reds are expecting that they're going to be able to make a trade. And if they're going to get somebody back, it's going to be a shortstop. And one of these names you mentioned, presumably, and I would have to think that Senzel would be in the mix in a deal like that. Where do you come down on trading Nick Senzel?
I think you said this last week with Jason, I would really struggle to do it for 2 years of Lindor, but I would probably do it. But I don't think I'd give him much else. I mean, you're giving up, what is it, 5 years of Senzel?
6 years, I think, right?
Five or six. Well, and probably, you know, if he challenges the last year, you know, blah, blah, blah. It could be five, it could be six, but I guess, you know, I just really struggle to give that up for 2 years of hardly anybody, maybe Mike Trout, and he could play center field.
Yeah, we'd do that. Yeah,
but I would probably do it, but I wouldn't throw much else in with it.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that, you know, all the rumors that or the speculation. Our buddy Leather Pants Jim Bowden had a piece on at the Athletic where he suggested the Reds trade Senzel, India, Mally, and somebody else, I think, for Lindor. And man, I really love Francisco Lindor. I really want Lindor, and none of those players we're talking about are going to be as good in those next 2 years as Lindor. But man, I have a tough.
Well, there's a reason Jim Bowden isn't a GM anymore.
Is it because he wears leather pants?
I don't think it is. I think it's because his judgment is questionable.
Yeah.
Of course, there's a reason that we're doing podcasts and not getting a paycheck from a ball club, too. So
that's true. So that's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. I've long said that no one is untouchable, and so I like Nick Senzel probably more than most, but he's not untouchable in any stretch of the imagination. But, man, I guess –
Well, you have to make a decision as to the 2 years of Lindor worth how many years of Senzel.
Yeah. So
that's the equation.
Senzel, who I believe is going to be a centerpiece of this offense for as long as he's here, and I don't give that up very easily. A young guy that can get on base, that you know has a great plate approach, who's athletic, one of the fastest center fielders in baseball last year by all the speed metrics, and so it is only going to get better. As a center fielder, that's a valuable guy to me. Now you do have the injury questions and all that, which have to be taken into account. But I'd probably do it if it's just Senzel and some lesser piece. But man, that'd be hard to do because I think you're giving up a lot.
Yes, saying that about Senzel, and you are probably higher on him than probably than anybody I know. How disappointed were you in his 2019?
Not at all. Other than the injury. Because let me tell you what happened on that. The Reds forced him to change his stance and his swing. And you can pinpoint the exact day when it happened, and that's when it all went downhill for him. You know, he tried to do it. He tried to do what they requested of him. They didn't force him, but they asked him to, and he tried, you know. He wants to do what the coaches say. Those coaches aren't there anymore. Nick Senzel has hit, until they made him change his swing, he has hit everywhere he's been. University of Tennessee, Cape Cod League, all the way through the minors, and in Cincinnati. His numbers, August 3rd, I think, was the date, 2nd or 3rd. If you look at his numbers on that date, are very good for a rookie. I think he had a .385 on base percentage at that time. .285 average and .3, I don't remember what his on base was. So I was obviously disappointed in the final numbers where they are, but I think there's a very clear line of demarcation as to why it went down and why everything before that point in his entire career was uniformly good. And so I'm worried about his ability to stay healthy more than I've ever been. I think that's the only thing that's going to keep him from being a star, is it whether he can stay healthy. And he's going to prove that. But production wise, I'm not concerned at all. You feel differently?
No, I don't. I expected him to be better last year than he ended up being. And a lot of it is attributable to what you say. And you wonder whether that's why those hitting coaches are not here any longer. The other thing is the injury thing. Him and same thing about Winker. You know, you guys have been talking about how Winker rakes, and he absolutely does. But you can't help the club when you're in the tub, you know?
It's completely fair. And, if you ever fluke things, and a lot of Senzels have been flukes, but on the other hand, they're adding up now. It's every year, the last 3 years, he's had these issues. Winker, you're exactly right. Winker, when he's hitting, man, you put him against a right-handed pitcher when he's healthy, and he's going to rake. But, yeah. What was that? You can't – when you're in the tub,
what is it? Club when you're in the tub.
I like that. You can't help.
George Halas or somebody even said that, or I don't remember who. I think it was a football coach that I heard that said that. Somebody I'm sure will be able to tell us who that quote is from.
Oh, man, that should be the headline for the name of this podcast. You can't help the
club. No, show, go, go, go.
Show, go, go, go. All right, there we go. Show, go, go, go.
Well, wouldn't it be great if it was still the base stealing era? Wouldn't he be a great guy to be stealing bases?
Oh my goodness gracious! It'd be fantastic. That'd be great. I'm really thrilled. I'm like you. I'm thrilled about getting Akiyama. I mean,
it's kind of like a present that you get to unwrap and you don't really know what you're going to get.
That's true. Yeah, you know, you expect it to be pretty good. You've heard that it's been pretty good. You know that it's pretty good, but you know we don't know. Also, we probably should mention the Reds are the last big league team now to have signed a player from Japan.
And I think that's good.
It is good. I mean, I think that the Reds, frankly, did not spend much in terms of scouting internationally in the past enough. They haven't been competitive in that front, and they've completely given away certain areas of the world to other clubs. And they're changing that approach over the last couple years, since Dick Williams really started implementing a lot of these changes. And so I think this is maybe the first fruit of their new investment into international scouting. And I hope it works out. I don't know that it will. I feel pretty good about it. I think he's going to be at least worth what he's going to be making. I mean, you know, we're talking $5-6 million a year, which is a lot of money to me. But it's not a ton of money for a big league outfielder necessarily. So they're not expecting him to come in and be a star. But he can come in and certainly be worth that, I would think.
I would be shocked if he wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said about the international scouting, you know, the bigger net you throw, the more fish you're going to catch.
That's right.
And you know, you hopefully get some good, we get some good fish with this bigger net.
I hope so. And I hope we have a lot of better things coming. That sort of leads into the last thing I wanted to mention before we get into our topic for the week, which is that Baseball America had their rankings this week of every big league team's draft performance in the 2010s. And I don't know if you saw this, Bill. I didn't give you a heads up we were going to talk about this, and we don't need to talk about it much because it reflects back into what we're talking about with the international scouting, that in terms of ranking every team's MLB draft performance during the decade of the 2010s, the Reds were dead last. Worst draft performance in the 2010s. And that combined with international scouting and lousy trades for all their assets is why the rebuild, mostly failed, frankly. So,
was there one good trade that they made?
Oh, yeah, there's more than one. You know,
during the rebuild, I'm trying to think of where I would say, boy, they snookered them on that.
Oh, there was, I think Eugenio Suarez, getting him for Alfredo Simon, Luis Castillo for Dan Straley. Some of these ones.
Yeah, but, see, I don't. Those weren't guys that they were trading to rebuild. I don't think those are guys that they were done with. I'm talking about like the Bruce trade, guys that still had some value to the team.
Well, those were trades though that they snookered other teams. The ones,
absolutely.
The ones where they had actual assets and were trying to move them to affect the rebuild. It's escaping me. I think they got fleeced on every single one of them. I don't know about fleeced. I think the Cueto trade was actually reasonable. I still think so. It didn't work out, and some of that might be because of the Reds' development system. But they got three live arms, that were well regarded around baseball for 2 months of Johnny Cueto. I mean, I think that was a it doesn't look good in retrospect necessarily.
But I agree with you, yeah. But I forgot about the Cueto deal. Yeah, when you get three guys that look like they're going to be able to help you, you know, they had good track records coming into here, and they just didn't pan out.
But, you know, the trades, the Frazier
Bruce and Chapman.
Right, yeah. All those, they absolutely, because of Walt Jocketty's insistence on getting guys that were kind of close to the big leagues, because he didn't know what he was doing, frankly, and thought that he thought the Reds were close, I guess. I don't know. And getting guys like Peraza, who's fine. I like Jose Peraza, but, you know, and Schebler, and, you know, trading Aroldis Chapman and getting nothing out of it except for an assistant pitching coach now. Caleb Cotham is the Reds assistant. I mean, just.
And we probably could have got him without the trade.
Probably. I mean, yeah. I mean, and at some point we probably do need to do a rebuild retrospective. Although I'm not sure I want to because, yeah. On all the big deals, except for maybe the Cueto one. And again, I'm just doing this off the top of my head. On all the big deals, they kind of dropped the ball, I think.
Yeah, they did not come out looking good.
And can you imagine where we'd be if they hadn't gotten Luis Castillo and Eugenio Suarez on these other deals? Because those ended up being huge pieces for this current team. I can't imagine.
I don't even want to think about that.
Oh, my goodness. Where would we be without those two? So, anyway, enough of that. Come on. We're excited now. It's going to be the 2020s are going to be the decade of the Cincinnati Reds, right?
It'll be the new Red Machine.
The new Red Machine in the 2020s. It's going to be just like the 70s.
We're going to roll, baby.
That's exactly right. And since we just finished up a decade, we thought we'd bring you one last all-decade list here. As we're starting the new, we're going to go back through the most memorable moments of the 2010s. You know, there's this book that's out. You may have read it. Probably not, Bill, but it's called The Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds. And so I wanted to look back.
That's right there.
Outstanding. I wanted to look back at the top 10 most memorable moments of the 2010s for the Reds. Not that many. And you said something when we were discussing this before, that we really could probably just put different Joey Votto seasons at every spot on this list, right?
Yeah, it would be, you know, hard to argue that Joey was not the highlight of the decade.
Yeah, it was the decade of Joey. So, but we will talk about Joey, but let's count them down, starting from number 10, the top 10 most memorable moments of the 2010s for the Cincinnati Reds, a mostly brutal decade with some real highlights. Number 10 on the list, Aristides Aquino going crazy in August, winning the National League Player of the Month in his first month in the big leagues. Aquino, of course, 14 home runs in that month. Aquino, a guy who had been non-tendered. Anybody could have had him in the offseason. He signs back with the Reds and then goes crazy, changes his stance, and, you know, fourth on the list of most home runs in 1 month by a rookie. Ties the Reds record for most home runs in a calendar month. In his first month in the big leagues, tied the Reds franchise record for most home runs in a calendar month with 14, Aristides Aquino. That month was just completely insane.
He was a lot of fun to watch. He seems like he's a really quality guy. He looks like he's, and you've talked about this in the past, he looks like he's having fun. You know, he's not out there drudging every night. But, and you talked about how he could have walked away, and there were many stories told during the season, while, you know, when he was playing, that he didn't want to play for anybody else.
Right.
You know, he wanted to stay with the Reds, which, you know, there's some value to that, too, to having a guy that's got some loyalty to the ball club.
But, yeah.
He had a pretty good August.
Pretty good.
He had 79 total bases in August. That's a career for some guys.
It is. Hit .320, 14 homers, 33 RBIs in 1 month. I mean, it's really just.
And his base percentage was .391.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No, just a fantastic moment and clearly deserving of being on the top 10. But you do point out something that I am going to probably continue to say that it doesn't have anything to do with baseball necessarily, but I like having guys like Aristides Aquino around who have fun and seem like they have a good personality and, you know, just likable guys. There's, as a fan, I don't know how much value there is, you know, from a team building perspective, I'll leave that to the front office, but from a fan perspective, give me as many of those guys as you can get. And Aquino's one of them, right?
Yeah, he sure seems like it anyway. And I haven't heard a bad word about the guy, you know.
No. And people were coming out of the woodwork to praise him when he was having that month, saying, oh, it couldn't happen to a better guy. So number nine on the list. And if you ask me on a different day, I could probably put this a little bit higher on the list because I was in the ball yard that day. It was probably the most exciting moment for me ever in a ballpark. No, that's not true. There's another on this list that's the most exciting for me ever at the ballpark. This was probably number two, though. But number nine on our list of the top 10 most memorable moments of the 2010s, Todd Frazier in the 2015 Major League Baseball Home Run Derby. We could probably also add that, you know, just as a moment, having the All-Star Game in Cincinnati, that was a big deal, even though it was part of the reason why the Reds delayed starting their rebuild, because they had it coming.
Yep.
But the, you know, Todd Frazier Home Run Derby. Any thoughts about that one?
I struggle with this because I'm not a Home Run Derby guy. Mm-hmm. And I know, and you said that, you've told me this many times, that it was so amazing in the ballpark that night. But I was always a Todd Frazier fan. The only thing I will say about this is, after he won the Home Run Derby, he collapsed in the second half of that season. He hit .220 the rest of the year. His OPS was .664 for the second half of that season.
It's true.
After having been .922 in the first half.
It's true. If you go back and look at it, that started about 2 or 3 weeks before the All-Star break, I think. But you're right. He was awful in the second half. But that night, for that one night, you know, Cincinnati was the showcase of the baseball world. And I don't know, it was just, it was electric in there because the fans were pulling for him. And it was the loudest. It was definitely the loudest I've ever heard Great American Ballpark. It wasn't the most exciting moment I've had at Great American Ballpark, but it was the loudest that I've ever heard that ballpark. And trying to will him to victory. And he came back from behind in every round. I don't know. That was a big moment. And I hope it played as well on television. I was so fortunate to be able to be there. It's something my son as well, you know.
He also went 0-for-3 in the game.
Well, whatever. Who cares? He won the Home Run Derby. Boy, I tell you what.
And we only had, I didn't realize this until I looked it up today. We only had two guys on the All-Star squad that year.
Chapman, right?
Yep.
But do you know who won the, future Red won the MVP of the All-Star game that year? Do you know who that was?
No.
Future Red, Mike Trout.
Oh.
So, there you go. All right.
He's going to play in center field. We're going to trade Senzel for Trout, even up.
I would. I'm sorry, Nick Senzel. I love you, but I would trade it straight up for Mike Trout. Yeah. First, I'd see if they'd take, like, Josh Van Meter. I like Van Meter,
but, you know, the only problem is, you know, it probably wouldn't happen now, but if Walt Jocketty was still the GM, we'd be trading Nick Senzel for a Trout.
Right. That's true. Maybe Randy.
You know, he sleeps with the fishes, you know. It would come wrapped up like the guy in The Godfather.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so number 10, Aristides Aquino's August. Number 9, Todd Frazier Home Run Derby, 2015. Number 8, and in terms of a moment, I would put this at his final start of the season, but really it encapsulates just a brilliant 2014 for Johnny Cueto. Before I get into his final start there and how he capped it off, because I happened to be there that day too, as well. Maybe I'm overrating some of these because I happened to be in there. But I don't think you can overestimate how good, especially in Reds history, how good his 2014 was. Can you kind of put that into perspective about how good he was that year?
He was pretty amazing. He led the league in games started, innings, strikeouts, batters faced, hits per nine. Came in second in the Cy Young. Made the All Star team. He was pretty had a WAR of 6.8.
Yeah, 20-9, 2.25 ERA.
Yep, it was a pretty amazing season for Cueto, and one of a number of pretty amazing seasons he had while he was pitching for the Reds.
I think it's an argument. I think maybe the only pitcher that I can think of in my lifetime for the Reds that was a better pitcher was Jose Rijo. And I think it's even arguable. At his height here in 2014, Johnny Cueto might be as good as any Reds pitcher since, you know, I don't know, 1950 or so. Just unbelievable Where do you rank Cueto in terms of the of best Reds pitchers in your lifetime?
In the top five, at the very least. You know, I think about Maloney. I think about Gary Nolan, Gullit, Rijo, Cueto. Somebody else just ran out of my head.
For me, you know.
Mario Soto, that's the other one.
Yeah, so that's, I was going to say, I've got, it's Rijo, Cueto are kind of 1 and 1A, and then Soto's just behind. So that's how.
And Soto always played on bad ball clubs.
But they were the Reds, so we loved them, right?
Oh, yeah, but it would have been interesting to see him pitch, you know, if he'd have been a few years older, being pitched in the big Red machine, pitched in the 70s instead of the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. Cueto won his 20th game that season on September the 28th, and it was a Sunday afternoon game. We said, "Oh, let's go on to the old ballpark to see if he can get his 20th victory." And he ended up pitching 8 innings, gave up 6 hits, 1 run, struck out 7, didn't walk anybody. So I mean, it was just another great start. But he also got the and Cueto, if you remember, was not a good hitter, but he got the hit up the middle to drive in the go ahead run, and so. It was a fun day at the old ball yard. And, I don't know. I'm just, he's another guy that I'm always going to be fond of. He was fun to have on the team, and maybe the Reds need to go get him back. How about Cueto's your number 5 starter? You handle that?
Wouldn't be bad. That'd be all right. I'm looking at the box score on Baseball Reference for that game.
You're going to mention what I had meant to say a moment ago and I forgot. Go ahead.
Who did Cueto drive in?
Oh, who did he drive in? I can look it up here. I don't remember. Who was it?
Jason Burgoyne? I don't even know who that is.
Bourgeois? Jason Bourgeois. Something. Come on.
It's one of them names. And he played left field. I don't even remember this guy.
You don't remember? Oh, my gosh.
He played in 18 games in 2014 at 68. He got 200 at bats, plate appearances for the Reds in 2015. I have no memory of this guy.
Jason Bourgeois. Here, I'm gonna quote a meme for you. I'm gonna see how many of our listeners know anything about their memes. You can let me know. The birds work for the bourgeoisie. So you don't know what that means, do you?
No, I have no clue what that means.
Yeah, Christopher Negron was the leadoff hitter that day.
Yeah.
But what I was going to mention was who did Cueto beat that day? The other team starter pitched 7 innings. They're playing the Pirates. Only gave up 1 run on 4 hits. Struck out 12 and walked none. Guy that's been in the headlines this offseason, Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, but he didn't get the loss, though.
He did not get the loss. That's true.
Mr. Cole.
Yep. So.
See, what now, you know, if you give him any trouble, he just hits you with his wallet.
Yes, it's pretty thick. All right, so now that's number 8, Johnny Cueto's 2014. Number 7, and this is all subjective. Where do you put any of these? This is a pretty memorable moment for a lot of us longtime fans, and that's, of course, Marty Brenneman retiring after 46 years behind the Reds microphone in 2019. It's going to be weird this year not having Marty behind the microphone, isn't it?
It is going to be weird, I talked about this at the end of the season. I didn't have the emotional attachment that a lot of people had to Marty, and I don't know why, but it's definitely going to be bizarre not hearing, and it won't be as good. There is nobody that's on this roster of announcers that can call a game like Marty Brenneman could. Nobody.
No, not even close. And you know, it'll be fine. I don't have. Although some of these guys they bring in for, you know, 1 or 2 games here and there are really kind of bad. I'm not going to mention any names. I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be, I'm not going to mention any names, but their initials are Doug Flynn and Danny Graves.
And Sean Casey's pretty bad too.
Yeah, but he's fun.
Yeah, he's fun, but God, I couldn't sit there and listen to him for 9 innings.
I agree. But, you know, you're right. It won't be the same. Just like it was never the same after the 31 years of Marty and Joe ended. It was never the same, never as good. Marty was still good, but it was never as good. Jeff Brantley has transformed himself into a pretty good broadcaster after a rough start, I thought. But, it's just going to be different. And you just can't really talk about the Reds over the last, 5 decades without Marty being a part of it because he was kind of the soundtrack to some really great Reds teams and really bad Reds teams, but he was there with all of us, I guess. So that's the number seven most memorable moment, Marty actually finally retiring. Let's see now. The we're up to number six now. This is an important one to me. Number six on the list is Barry Larkin was inducted in the Hall of Fame in 2012. The way you feel about, I think the best way I can put it about the way I feel about Barry Larkin is kind of the way you feel about a guy like Pete Rose. Because Larkin is a guy that I saw play his whole career in Cincinnati. I've talked about this. I don't need to go into it enough, but anymore here on the podcast. But, you know, you got a guy that's a Hall of Famer, that's a MVP, 12-time All-Star, a world champion, three gold gloves, nine silver sluggers. I mean, and did it all from Cincinnati and then did it his whole career in Cincinnati. And when he finally got elected to the Hall of Fame, that was, to me, a huge moment. Because he was, I don't know, he's Barry. Does that make sense?
Yep. Barry Larkin's one of my favorites too. I've never had the opportunity to meet Barry Larkin, but I have met his brother Byron. As some people know here, I'm a big Xavier basketball fan, and his brother Byron is the all-time leading scorer at Xavier. And I've met Byron a number of times, and I even got the chance to meet their father. I ran into their father at an event years ago we were at a management conference, and he said, he introduced himself, and I said, Larkin. I said, are you really? He said, yeah, those are my boys. And just the nicest. And everybody I've ever met, you know, both the people that I met in this family are just quality individuals. Barry's a Cincinnati kid. I always root for the Cincinnati kids. 19 years as a Red, you know, nine silver sluggers, three gold gloves, 12 all-star games, an MVP. He's third on the Reds all time in WAR, third in games, third in runs, second in hits, third in total bases, second in doubles, sixth in RBIs, four in walks, third in stolen bases, third in runs created. He's third in stolen base percentage ahead of Joe Morgan.
That's saying something.
Yeah. The other thing I want to say about Barry was he was featured quite a bit in the thing that's on this, Major League Baseball short or piece that they just recently did on Dave Parker and Dave's battle with Parkinson's. And Barry's in it quite a bit from the Reds. Most of the Reds are Eric Davis, Barry Larkin, and Pete Rose. And Barry tells a story about when Parker came to the Reds, he said, I wasn't as mature as I probably should have been. He said, and I was taking some things for granted. He said, and so one night after a game, Parker told me to come out and meet him on the field. And he said, so I grabbed a bat. I figured we were going to do some hitting. He said, we went out there. And Dave basically told me that if I didn't adjust my attitude and start playing hard every day, every play, we were going to have a problem. It must have meant something to Barry because he called out Dave Parker. Parker was at his Hall of Fame induction. He called Parker out by name in his speech. So...
Well, that's interesting. That's really interesting. That was probably on the list of most memorable moments of the 80s for the Reds. Because look what Barry Larkin turned into. Thank you, Dave Parker.
Now, that's, Dave Parker was a heck of a player when he played for the Reds.
He sure was. So Barry Larkin, though, inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Now, number five on our list is a moment that when I first put together just a list for us to work off of to decide how we're going to cut this down, I completely forgot this one, and it's ridiculous. There's an argument this could be even higher, but this is really kind of two moments combined into one. It's Homer Bailey and his two no-hitters. And as you reminded me before we went on air, less than a calendar year between them, right?
Yeah. One was in September, late September, and the other one was in early July the following year. Game scores of 96 and 95. The first one, in the first game, we struck out against the Pirates when he struck out 10 and won the game 1-0. And the Reds scored their run in the first top of the first inning. He threw 74 strikes, and 20 of them were looking strikes, which I find was interesting because I never think of Homer Bailey as getting a lot of, you know, taking strikes.
Yeah, that's true.
But I thought that was kind of interesting looking at the box scores for those games.
Yeah. The second one's July 2nd, 2013, and it's memorable to me because, you know, he was perfect through six innings, and then he walked. Oh. He walked Gregor Blanco with a full count in the seventh, and then finished the game, you know, perfect. And so they asked him, you know, what's the thing? He goes, I just blank and walked a guy. You know, it happens.
Yeah. Well, he didn't say blanking.
He did not. I'm not going to say what he said, but just blank and walked a guy.
And that was on T-shirts like 2 days later.
Of course.
I mean, you started seeing it on T-shirts around town.
Homer Bailey, what might have been with that guy? You know, if Bailey had the personality that you know, some of these other guys had, he might be way more beloved here because he had some great moments for the Reds. But
made a lot of money here.
Well, that's what you hear anytime you mention his name. Hey, he signed this week as well with Minnesota Twins, by the way.
Yes, he did. Good luck to Homer.
Yeah, good luck to him. I saw he signed.
So we play him in the World Series, and I want to beat his brains in. But
yeah, that's exactly right. But they signed Rich Hill as well. The Twins. And somebody mentioned in our Slack channel, man, the Twins are going to be really good. They're going to have a really good 2011 this year. So, all right, number four on the list of the Dreads' top 10 most memorable moments of the decade. We're counting them down. Number four, June 6, 2017. Scooter Gennett hits four home runs, becoming one of 17 players to homer four times in one game. Finished with 10 RBIs and probably the most unlikely person to hit four home runs in a game. Claimed off waivers, you know, months before, and 38 career home runs coming into that night. Had only three home runs in the whole season up until that night. So he hits four home runs and becomes a part of Reds lore, I guess. So do you have any memories of that night?
No, I don't even think I was watching a ball game that night. I have no memory of it all. But the best, you know, the best thing about that?
What's that?
He did it. He did it against the Cardinals.
That's always great. That is, and they beat the Cardinals 13-1.
Yeah,
that night. What I remember is
and Wainwright is the one that he hit two of them off of, didn't he?
I think so. Here, I've got it. I think I've got it here. Well, I can't find it right now, but what I remember is that I actually didn't watch it either, but I was in the car with my son. We were driving home, and he'd already hit. We'd got in the car, and he hit his second right after we got in the car. I was like, oh, well, crazy. Scooter has two home runs. And we were driving. We had a long drive and listened to the rest of the game in the car. And by the time he came to his fourth at bat, we felt like we were in the stadium because we were, you know, kind of, no way. Is he Scooter Gennett? Is he really going to be able to do this? So that was... That was fun. That was a memorable moment. And also, you've heard us talk about the story with the Big 50, which is that our publisher delayed publication of that book for a year for reasons, business reasons, and that because they did that, it gave us an opportunity to go back to him and say, "Hey, can we add a chapter after he hit the four home runs?" And so we got to put that in the book. I hope there are some moments that happened in 2020 that should be in the second edition of the book because there certainly weren't any in 2019. Although I guess actually Aristides Aquino might apply.
Yeah.
Let's move to number three. Number three.
What got bumped for Scooter?
Walker Cooper, the previous best offensive
day. All right.
He had three home runs, six hits, 10 RBIs. In a game.
So Walker Cooper goes back to anonymity.
Yes, we were going to try to give him a little love.
Because of Scooter.
We didn't even change the title of the chapter. It was still the greatest batting performance in Reds history, I think, something like that. So, number three, most memorable moment of the decade. And again, this is kind of what we talked about coming into it, which is that this could really have been different spots, different years for Votto. But Joey Votto wins the MVP in 2010. That's where we'll call the jumping off point. That's the most, maybe the high point for him. First Reds MVP since the aforementioned Barry Larkin. And, right? That's right, yeah. And then before that,
Joe... Yeah, I think that's right. I was chewing on it when you jumped in there, so...
Yeah, and then before that, Joe Morgan, I believe. No,
yeah. No, Foster.
Foster won, that's right. So, you know, at 26 years old, that's a big year for the Reds, obviously, but he hits .324, .424 on base, .600 slugging, led the league in on base and slugging, 37 homers, 113 ribeye steaks. Really kind of... I mean, you can argue that he had better years because he's had so many good ones. But and I think by wins above replacement, there's probably at least 2 or 3 years that you could argue were better. But man, that was just that was when Joey Votto became the fully realized version of Joey Votto, and we saw it all decade. You wanted to argue for just putting his entire decade on the list, right?
Yeah, I did. He averaged 153 hits and 23 home runs for the decade. He hit .306, .428, .516 for the decade. His OPS plus average for the decade was 152.
52% above league average.
He had a WAR of 52.1 for the decade, and he led the team 7 out of the 10 years.
Gosh.
That's not bad.
I worry that I'm not going to live long enough to see a better Cincinnati Red than Joey Votto.
And the sad thing is there would be people that would argue with you.
I know. It's one of the things that I will never, ever, ever understand is why he's not more beloved
by more people. He just walks too much, man.
Oh, my gosh. Joey Votto, MVP 2010, number 3 most memorable moment of the decade. We could spend an hour talking about Joey Votto, and someday we will. Number 2 on the list, most memorable moments of the decade, the 2002, the Reds clinched the 2002 Central Division Championship. So really the 2012 team winning the division championship. And you had a note that I think is right. We really believed at the time that they won that division championship that they were what?
The best team in baseball.
Yeah.
The only one that had a better record was the Nationals. And it was, I think they were half a game better than the Reds or something like that. It was very close.
Yeah, and I think it wasn't a consensus necessarily, but I think that a lot of people would argue that the Reds were just, the Reds pitching staff was as good as it's been. I mean, the best pitching staff they've had in ever. It's the pitching staff that this team is going to be, compared against going forward.
Well, that was the year that their starters started every game but one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
And you talked about Cueto's, 2014. He was 19-9 with a .278 ERA and a 5.2 WAR and a .148 ERA plus in 2012. So he wasn't bad that year either.
Yeah, that'll get it done. And then, of course, you had Joey Votto was fantastic again that year, although he was hurt. If you remember, got that big injury and only played in 111 games, but still led the team in wins above replacement. Brandon Phillips had probably his best season that year. Matt Latos was great. Arroyo was great. Cozart, Zach Cozart he hadn't quite become Cozart yet, but he's still pretty good. I mean, it was a fun team.
Was that the year that Frazier took over for Roland at third base? It looks like it.
Well, Roland played 92 games that year. I think he was hurt.
Did he get hurt?
Yeah, he got hurt. Frazier played in 128 games, but I'll have to pull it up here. Look, I think that those were mostly around the field, weren't they? I think he played.
Yeah, I don't know. Let me look at where he played then.
I've got it. 2012. He played. He played 73 games at third. So that was when Roland was hurt mostly. 39 at first. He played in left field. He played DH. He played right field. So, but mostly at third base. But that was the kind of transition year where he was becoming the guy.
And Ryan Ludwig had a big year for the Reds that year too.
He did. He did. Ryan Ludwig, formerly the most expensive free agent in Reds history. But hey, look, he hit 26 home runs, hit .275, .130 OPS plus. Really good year out in left field for the Reds. So I don't know.
Jay Bruce had a good year, and
it was a team that I think you really could make the argument they were the best team in baseball, which makes it even more frustrating.
Yes, it does.
That they could not win a single series in the postseason. Ugh. That's one of the least memorable moments. We're not going to talk about the Giants series. So now we're up to number 1, the most memorable moment of the decade, and this could not be anything else, in my opinion, other than Clinchmas, September 28th, 2010. It's hard to really, I guess we can kind of remember now because we've been beaten back down again as Reds fans, but it's kind of hard to remember how bad things were right before 2010, how awful the Reds had been for so long, and just not even competitive. And so that year was just when Jay Bruce hit the home run that night in the bottom of the ninth, right? To lead off the bottom of the ninth to give the Reds the 3-2 victory over the Astros. It was like just a weight had been lifted, and it was just pure joy amongst the Reds fan base. That's the best way I can describe it. What are your memories?
Just Jay being so excited, running, you know, after the ball went out, after it hit the batter's eye in left center field, and you felt like the drought was over.
Finally, yeah. Yeah, I was there sitting out in the moon deck, not too far from where the home run came out there. But I just remember, it happened, and it was pandemonium immediately. I remember looking at our friend Joel Luckup, and we kind of looked back and forth at each other like, what, high five, and then, wait, what just happened? How's this possible? Because we'd spent we've been talking about the Reds all – every day, basically, for so many years. And for so many years, this had never, was not even a possibility. And so the sad part is the most memorable moment of the decade happened in 2010. Nearly.
Yeah.
nearly 10 years ago.
Well, and it had been 15 years before that since they'd won anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's been since 1995 they won a playoff game at home.
Ugh.
That is disgusting. It's 2020.
That's Bengal-like.
That's a quarter of a century. Oh, my gosh.
You're killing me here.
Yeah, sorry about that. Anyway, it's number one most memorable moment clinch. Let's count them down just quickly again. The most memorable moments of the decade. Number 10, Aristides Aquino, National League Player of the Month in his first month in the big leagues. Number 9, Todd Frazier, thrilling home run derby. Number 8, Johnny Cueto's brilliant 2014, capped by driving in the game-winning run and getting his 20th win in the last day, the last home game of the season. Number 7, Marty Brenneman retires after 46 years. Number 6, Barry Larkin, Reds legend, inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2012. Number 5, Homer Bailey, 2 no-hitters in the decade. Number 4, Scooter Gennett, 4 home runs in June of 2017. Number 3, Joey Votto wins the 2010 MVP. Number 2, the Reds win the Central Division championship with, I'm just going to say it, the best team in baseball in 2012. And then number 1, clinchmas, the Reds win the 2010 division championship. So there were some fun moments. It was a really tough decade in a lot of ways, but there were some fun moments, right?
Yep, and I got an addendum.
Let's hear it.
We'll call this number 10A or something, because I had one on my list that you didn't have on yours, and that was Pete Rose being inducted in the Reds Hall of Fame. I was there that day, and the ballpark was electric. It was pretty neat. Say what you want to say about Pete Rose, it'll probably be true, but he was a heck of a ball player for this team.
No question about it. No question whatsoever.
But it was June 26th, 2016. They inducted Pete and retired number 14. Was a high point in the decade for me.
Yeah, yeah. So understandable. The only other one that I had that I really wanted to put on the list, but it didn't really fit, was Amir Garrett and Yasiel Puig fighting the Pittsburgh Pirates. I thought those were memorable moments. So anyway, that was fun. Let's see where we are here. We have time, I think, for just a couple of viewer mail questions. If you want to dig into that really quickly.
Absolutely.
Bill Lack. These questions that are presented to us at patreon.com/redlegradio, where you too can support the podcast, things we're doing. I want to give a big thank you to my guy, Todd Stockelman. Todd, new supporter of the podcast at Patreon. Todd Stockelman, thank you so much. Now, what?
Welcome aboard, Todd.
Yeah. What position does Todd play? To me, Todd Stockelman is
a utility infielder.
A utility infielder, you think so? I can see that, but I don't know. In my head, I'm getting the idea of a shutdown closer. He's right-handed closer. Probably wears some intimidating form of eyewear. That's what I'm seeing here. So
maybe he's the modern day Jim Brosnan.
The modern day Jim Brosnan.
Yeah, he was the first guy that wrote about baseball, pitched for the Reds on the 61 team.
Oh, yeah, I know Jim Brosnan is, but I've never heard anyone described as the modern day Jim Brosnan.
Well, I'm just thinking he's a reliever and a, you know.
An intellectual type?
Intellectual, smart guy.
There you go.
Wily veteran.
A wily veteran. So thanks for joining.
I'm bringing my George Graham descriptions out now.
You really are. Oh, man, George Graham.
What a good man.
Good guy. All right. So I put out a call for viewer mail questions at Patreon and did say, like, I'm not sure we may not be able to get to all of them, but we'll get to some if we can here. Because I knew we'd be taking some time to do the top 10 list, but, let's see what we've got. How about we take one from Rick Boyer? Rick Boyer says, thinking of the Reds and top-tier free agent signings, my thoughts that the money isn't so much the issue as the years. Do you think some of the big boys go into an 8- or 10-year contract with little expectations for the back end simply because they can afford it? Reds fans do carry on about lengthy contracts such as Bailey and Votto. Yes, Reds fans do carry on about those. It's ridiculous. I think that's absolutely the way that, certainly traditionally, I don't know, things may be changing in terms of free agency, but I think you sign up these long-term contracts knowing that you're going to get fleeced on the back end of it, but that you're going to be getting great value on the front end of it. So overall, the contract makes sense. With Joey Votto, these last few years, that he may not be earning what he is being paid. But he's been so far above in terms of value, what his value is worth, above what he has been getting paid for the last, 10 years, that it makes all the financial sense in the world. So anything you have to add to that, Bill?
I agree with you, and I think it goes back to how short of memories fans have. They remember the front end of the they don't remember the front end of the contract that was years ago where they were getting such a deal. But then when the guys are struggling as they age or whatever, for whatever reason, and they're getting big money, they go, "Oh God, why are they signing this long term contract? It's holding us back. Now we can't compete."
Oh my goodness. I don't know what to say about that imitation of Reds fandom, but I like it. I think you're right. I'm sure that fans of other teams carry on about it. Although I'm not sure any fan base cares more about what their team's players make than the Reds fans do, because Reds fans are obsessed with how much players make. It's the craziest thing I've ever heard. You can't mention Votto without somebody wanting to talk about what his paycheck reads. Ugh. Kyle Kapler asks to patreon.com/redlegradio. I believe Trevor Story would be quite the quote-unquote story for the 2020 season as they appear to have 2020 vision. With Akiyama in the mix now, would you make that trade if it meant not giving up Senzel and more than likely Winker? Why or why not? So Trevor Story, and then there's a related question by Hooper Powell that I want to add to this same mix here. Hooper says, not sure Lindor is going to happen now, but can you see a scenario with him getting traded to L.A.? And if so, how big of a package would it take to get Corey Seager from L.A.? If not, where do you go? Maybe Trevor Story or Dean Segura. First of all, about Trevor Story. I like Trevor Story. He's been a valuable player. He would be an upgrade, a big upgrade at shortstop for the Reds. But I cannot escape the fact that his away splits, his home road splits, are so drastic away from course. I mean, he's still a pretty good player. You know, he's not awful. But his career splits on the road are a 250 average, 313 on base, 443 slugging. I mean, now
that's pretty pedestrian.
Well, for a shortstop, you can handle it because he is a good defensive shortstop, at least a reasonable defensive shortstop.
Yeah, but he's not going to be a part of a cornerstone of your offense.
He's better than Freddie Galvis, so he's an upgrade.
You want to raise that bar a little bit, please?
Well, that's the bar right now. Whoever the Reds get at shortstop just has to be better than Freddie Galvis to help the team. So, but you're right. I don't think I give up a ton for him just because. Now, there are some other things you can say is that a lot of his away games in the National League West are played in parks like San Diego and L.A. and these big parks where offense is depressed as well. So there's some of that. So maybe he's a little better than that when he comes to Great American Ballpark. But I don't know. I look at his wins above replacement numbers, and they're really good. And he's a guy that I really like the idea of having him on the team. But I'm really skeptical about whether it plays outside of Colorado. And maybe I shouldn't be as skeptical as I am. So I wouldn't give up a ton for him. Now, the other part of that is Corey Seager. And you know, how big of a package would it take? I don't ever know how to answer that question, because it really depends on what the Dodgers want. And, and there's really not much of a way for us to really know that from the outside. I like Corey Seager too, though. I mean, you mentioned him earlier, right? And I'm just looking at him. What I like about Corey Seager, he's going to be 26 next year. Now he has had the injury issues.
In 2018, he missed basically the whole season.
But I guess if you're the Dodgers and you are wanting to upgrade your team, and you have the ability, the assets to upgrade anywhere, you should upgrade anywhere. You know, you're making your team better. Francisco Lindor is probably better than Corey Seager. But Corey Seager's awfully good. And, we're talking about a guy that was a 4-win player last year. In his 22 and 23-year-age seasons, essentially a 6-win player each of those two seasons, just under. I don't know. If the Reds can't get Lindor, of course, I don't know that Seager's available unless the Dodgers get Lindor. But if the Reds can't get Lindor, I would love to have Corey Seager. So, any other thoughts about that, Bill?
I'm the same way. I would love to have, you know, like you said, he would be my second choice.
Oh, man. All this talk that we did earlier about what happens with Senzel and all these outfielders that are potentially in the mix now, it would, you know, it's not unrealistic speculation to say that maybe there is a blockbuster still out there to happen for the Reds in terms of trade. And maybe the Reds will get a star type player at shortstop. And if they can get a star type player at shortstop, let's say they get Ozuna and they make a big trade for a star at shortstop, either Lindor or Seager, for example, or Carlos Correa. It really doesn't even matter to me who you give up among those outfielders. I think you probably are still got enough left to have a playoff team. So that's, yes, please do it, I guess. Just don't trade Senzel unless I approve it. Jordan
said. Well, I assume that was a given, you know.
Exactly.
Nick would write a letter saying he wasn't going because Chad didn't say he could go.
Exactly. Will Delaney, your question's a good one. We are really kind of already answered that in this podcast. So I'm going to go to the last couple questions. Jordan Salisbury asks, any New Year's resolutions for Chad or Bill? I'm looking forward to a decade where the Reds are celebrating playoff series wins and less hand-wringing. Also, special thanks to you, Bill, Jason, and Doug for doing these podcasts. They kept me sane in a tough year. Happy New Year to everyone. Hash Brown, Viramel. Thank you very much for the kind words, Jordan. Thank you for joining the pirate ship here at Patreon. New Year's resolutions, Bill. You do New Year's resolutions?
I guess I do. I mean, but they're always the same. You know, try to lose a little more weight. You know, have a healthy year and hope that my family has a good year, you know. And I want to say to Jordan, you say here that you had a tough year. I hope you have a better year in 2020, my friend.
Yeah, me too.
The true New Year's resolutions? No, you know, I don't smoke. I'm gonna try to not rampage at the Red Leg Nation Christmas party this year. That's my resolution.
Your resolution should be to start smoking if you don't smoke.
Ew. No, thank you.
My New Year's resolution this year, it's actually the same one that I had last year that I wasn't able to accomplish, but I'm going to do it again this year. This is my resolution for the New Year's is in 2020, I'm finally going to complete my first Toyotathon. I'm sorry. I don't know why I am the way I am.
Rip shot.
There you go. Dwight Kelly. Dwight Kelly, to seriously answer that question, no, I'm not really making any New Year's resolutions, but I am looking forward to watching the Reds in 2020. I think it's going to be a fun season. Dwight Kelly, Hash Brown Viewer Mail, what do you guess will become of Alex Wood? No one has signed him yet. And then beating Joe Farsing this question, because Joe usually has these crazy ones. His next question is, Sting the musical artist or Sting the wrestler? So first of all, what do you guess will become of Alex Wood? I have always thought that the Reds had stood a good chance of re-signing Alex Wood. Now I'm not so sure since they got Wade Miley. Wood would have been a Wade Miley type for me, a guy with a great pedigree who, you know, if he can stay healthy. And he clearly liked working with this Reds pitching staff. But our pitching coaches. But I'm surprised. Are you surprised, as I am, Bill, that we don't heard much about Alex Wood? I would have thought that he'd be somewhere by now.
I would have thought. I think what's going to happen is he'll sign a minor league deal somewhere. I'd love to be here.
Oh my goodness, yes. Oh,
you know, and even if he has to start the year in Louisville, at some point we're going to need more than five pitchers. You know, we've said that all along.
I'd give anything for Alex Wood on a minor league deal with an invite to spring training. Oh. Please.
Yeah. And maybe, that, you know, of course, you know, as the herd thins here as we get closer to spring training, you know, either guys get desperate or they're willing to wait and find the deal they want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Depending on the guy.
And I hope he has an opportunity somewhere. I mean, you know, I like Alex Wood. No issues with him. I was hoping the Reds would sign him. And his last, Dwight's last question, Sting the musical artist or Sting the wrestler?
Actually, I'll go with old Sting the Wrestler. The original Sting with the blue Sting the Wrestler, not older Sting in the black the Wrestler, over Sting the Music Artist.
Okay. I've never heard of Sting the Wrestler, old or new. I don't know anything about Sting the Wrestler. I have heard Sting the Musical Artist, and so since I have heard Sting the Musical Artist, I'm going to choose Sting the Wrestler.
Okay.
So, okay, I think that'll about do it for today. That's a fun one. We'll wrap her up. First podcast of the new decade, episode number 303 of Red Leg Nation Radio. You can find us everywhere you find podcasts. Please tell your friends about us. That's the best way to get people. I mean, we ask you to go leave ratings and reviews, and that absolutely helps people find us. But really the best way for people to find us, tell your friends about this crazy podcast you listen to. That we are, I think I saw that we did 62 podcasts in the free feed in 2019, and we're going to keep it up in the new year. Have a lot of fun. I hope following a really fun Reds team this year. Bill, any final thoughts for our audience?
My New Year's resolution, I just thought of it, is to be listening to the Reds play in the World Series in October or November.
Okay. Well, you resolve to do that and work really hard at it, okay?
I'm gonna do everything I can with my mental agility to make that happen.
I hope that's not what world champion is depending on. For Bill Lack and Shogo Akiyama, this is Chad Dotson saying, Shogo, go, go.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app, and join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.